The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed in the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
The following program presents and discusses general mental health topics. This program should not be interpreted as medical advice. Please consult your doctor if you have any questions about topics discussed on this program and if they apply to your situation. Welcome to Mental Health with Dr. Sarita Rao. We will talk about and feature a variety of behavioral health issues. We also invite you, the listener, to contribute to the discussion through calls as well. Now, here is your host, Dr. Sarita Rao.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Mental Health with Dr. Sarita Rao. Our topic today is of great interest to a lot of people. It's bullying, and we're going to talk about bullying among children, including our teenagers, but we're also going to talk about bullying behaviors among adults and what kind of role modeling are we doing for our kids. And our guest today is child psychiatrist Dr. Ernest German. So bullying seems to have become rampant in our society today. It's hard to tell whether bullying has increased in society or whether we're just more aware of it. But one thing that's true is that with the tremendous increase in access to ever more sophisticated technology, new ways to carry out this age-old practice have emerged. Yet, whether it's the physical bullying between boys in the schoolyard, social media and cyberbullying by so-called mean girls in and out of school, or the supervisor at work who uses tactics of intimidation to create a culture of fear, they all carry some common underlying psychological and behavioral patterns. So one person is seen as weak, either because of their personality, because they are not as good at standing up to other people, or maybe more conciliatory in nature, trying to make things better, keep the peace. Or the other person is seen as weak just because of circumstances. They really need the job, and they report to the bullying person. So they can't necessarily stand up to them if they feel that they are going to be fired. And the other person or people use techniques designed to humiliate and harm the victim. Sometimes this is done to get something from the other person, but at other times the bully or the bullies just seem to like the feeling of power that this behavior brings them. And it helps their poor self-esteem sometimes. Are bullying behaviors increasing among our young people today? Or were they always there and more focus is being put on the issue in our current world? Also, when we think about girl bullying, many people think of girl bullying behaviors such as excluding someone from a high school clique, not inviting them to birthday parties, or constantly making fun of their clothes and fashion sense as being a softer version of bullying, maybe not quite as bad as physical violence. But this kind of bullying among girls can really inflict emotional scars that impact the victim long into adulthood, sometimes through their entire life. It also sends a bad message to all the girls involved that somehow they have to be very competitive among each other around clothes, you know, appearance, boys, just everything. So we want to teach our kids to be kind to each other, to share, to help bring the classmate or playmate along that appears weaker. But are we inadvertently sending them mixed messages as society as a whole values success and winning more and more? What kind of role modeling are we providing to them in the media, in our everyday lives, as we wait in line at the grocery store or drive in traffic or even compete for that promotion at work? Is there a way to raise children who will be successful and ambitious and yet be able to achieve their goals without kicking someone off the ladder behind them? Another pattern of bullying exists in families where one family member or sibling is treated badly throughout childhood. Other people are constantly overtly critical of them. And these patterns in families can often persist throughout life, even when that victim, sibling has grown up and has their own children. And these victims in many situations often do not speak up because they want to keep the family relationships, they don't want to be rude, they want to keep the peace, and they don't want to sever these family relationships. These are questions that do not always have a clear-cut answer. The more overt forms of bullying are still present, and they may be easier to identify as long as someone comes forward, either a victim or an observer. And those need to be dealt with in a decisive manner, and a culture definitely needs to be created in our schools and our workplaces that allow people to come forward without fear. But the situations that are not so easily resolved are when the intimidation is more in a gray zone. Also, what about simple teasing? When is it good-natured fun, and when does it go too far in harming the other person? One way to teach our kids is to set some clear stop signs that when the other person is getting upset or uncomfortable, let's try to teach them to put themselves in the other person's shoes. Think about what they're experiencing, empathize with them, realize that some people may be more sensitive than others. So that's our topic today, and please, I encourage phone calls. Please call in to share your own experiences, ask a question. The phone number to call is 1-866-472-5792. So let's talk to Dr. Ernest German, who is subspecialized in child psychiatry, and ask him, what does he think about this whole issue? So Dr. German, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you.
So, you know, you're a child psychiatrist and you're specialized in treating children and adolescents with mental health issues. So what do you feel? I'm sure you see kids who are both victims of bullying or who might have engaged in aggressive behaviors.
Yes, I actually see a large number of the former, a lot of children and adolescents who have been the victim, but also, as you've mentioned, some that have actually engaged in perpetuating or perpetrating the bullying behavior. And oftentimes what we will find is sometimes you'll have some children and adolescents that are actually at times in either role, depending on what may be happening in their own lives.
That's interesting. So there are kids you meet that are both a bully and a victim in different areas of their life?
Yes, exactly. So, for example, the adolescent may experience some bullying while they're in school because of some of the things you have mentioned already. And in that sense of poor self-esteem, then when they are home or in their neighborhood, if there is someone now who they perceive as being weaker to them, then they oftentimes may perpetrate that same bullying behavior now to someone else to try to inflate their own self-esteem.
Now, we've all experienced, bullies in our life, both as kids and as grown-ups, you know. And sometimes, if we think back to our own childhood, sometimes we, told our parents or teachers, and sometimes we just didn't tell them. What do you think sets some people aside from others? Like, you know, as we go through life, we meet a lot of people who've never bullied anyone and wouldn't bully anybody. And they could have very assertive personalities and they can have an argument with someone, but that's not the same thing as bullying. Mm-hmm. Then we've met people that when they get a chance, they like to kind of push people around or in a more severe way, you know, try to intimidate someone or bully them. So What do you think the difference is between these two sets of people?
Well, you actually, I think, touched on a large part of it, which is oftentimes the person that is bullied, for whatever reason, they are in a subordinate type of position, and that allows them to be then taken advantage of. And one additional group of individuals, aside from the two that are usually participating, is the bystander and what effects that has on that person. So oftentimes when that person who is being bullied, when that behavior is being done to them, then you have others who may not partake, but they don't do anything about it either. And that often makes the person feel even more the victim of poor self-esteem and those traits. Then on the other aspect, when we're talking about the person who's perpetrating this behavior, they oftentimes are engaging in this behavior because they have low self-esteem themselves and are trying to take a point of power so that they can feel empowered over someone else. So those tend to be the two particular situations that happen. But then again, that third situation is that other person who's just kind of there and not doing anything about it, but yet it is still impacting them as they go ahead and continue to develop in their own development.
And, you know, with kids, I think that, you know, when you look at, you know, let's say mean girl behavior in school, where girls make fun of another girl for, you know, usually it has to do with appearance, clothes, hair, whatever, then fashion, you know, that's sort of like seems to have, you know, be true in all cultures and across the generations. There's often like other girls standing in the group that may not participate, but they're afraid to speak up and say anything because, one, they don't want the spotlight to turn on them, and two, they just want to please the mean girl who's usually, you know, popular. So, you know, what do you think? Do you think, how can we teach our kids to say something, I mean, even say something gently to kind of intervene?
Right. So in thinking about possible ways to interrupt that cycle, one of the key things that you touched on in the introduction is the culture that kids are growing up in. So when they witness, whether it's on the news where certain people are being constantly, you know, approached and made, you know, focused on because of sensationalism with the news stories, or whether it's politics or whether it's sports, like you've mentioned, children are sponges, so they're constantly seeing adult behavior. So if adults, if a parent is in a particular situation where something is inappropriate, even if they're just sitting around the dinner table and it's, you know, a situation where it's inappropriate behavior, if the parent says something and lets the child know that that is inappropriate and, you know, speaks to the child speaks to the child or the adolescent and says, you know, hey, if you have anything like this occurring, I would hope you would feel comfortable in being able to talk to me about it, so that the child and the adolescent already feel like, A, they are aware of these things, even though it's on a higher level, and then second, that they have that comfort in being able to approach their parent. Or even tell the child, if you don't feel comfortable talking to me, if you feel comfortable, let's say, talking to one of your older cousins who may be closer in age, but so that they feel, you know, if I need to do something about this, I can turn to someone to speak to them about it.
That is a really good point, is to almost like the way we talk to our kids about drugs, for instance, you know. I'm a big advocate of talking to the kids about drugs, being an addiction psychiatrist. You know, I think you should start very early when they're like 4 or 5 years old, and, and you can discuss cigarettes and then you can discuss other drugs, because by the time they become preteens, your influence on them is decreasing. You know, at that point, they start listening to their peers more. But if you've been talking to them about drugs from when they're little, then they're at least likely to remember something. So I think it's sort of similar. I agree with you. That's a really great point, that if we see something as we're out and about, somebody trying to intimidate a waiter in a restaurant because they didn't like their salad or something, then to just say that this is really not the best way to approach things.
Mm-hmm.
When we come back from our break, what I would like to do is talk a little bit more about girl bullying, because that is far more rampant, I think, than we acknowledge. And some of it is almost a normal part of growing up and learning how to negotiate these complex, relationships between women, which can be both supportive and competitive at the same time, and learning how to pick your friends. But some of it is really, harmful. So we could talk about that and maybe also talk about family members. So listeners, if you would like to call in, the number is 1-866-472-5792. You're listening to Mental Health with Dr. Sarita Rao. Find my show's Facebook page, Dr. Sarita Rao Radio Show, and find out more about upcoming guests and topics. And we will come back again on the other side of this short break.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Cancer is not something to be taken lightly. But instead of being talked at by doctors, medical providers, and others, wouldn't it be nice to hear from a host who has worked at the Cancer Coalface for 38 years as a caregiver, supporter for 14,000 patients, and who has had the experience of having a life-threatening condition herself? You will hear the stories of survivors and other people who work in breakthrough cancer medicine. Navigating the Cancer Maze with host Grace Galler will help you with the facts, planning, and grief experienced with different forms and stages of cancer. Listen every Friday at 12 noon U.S. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Helping you make informed decisions for your life. This is Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to Mental Health with Dr. Sarita Rao. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Now, back to today's program.
Hi, everyone. You're listening to Mental Health with Dr. Sarita Rao. We're talking about bullying today, and our guest today is Dr. Ernest German, who is a child psychiatrist who has trained both in adult psychiatry and then specialized in treating child and adolescent patients with all kinds of mental health issues. So if you would like to call in and discuss your own experience with bullying or any thoughts you have about bullying, it would be 866-472-5792. You can find my show's Facebook page, Dr. Sarita Rao Radio Show, and find out more about upcoming guests and topics. If you like my page, then it will show up in your feed with reminders and information. So when we come back, we're coming back to this topic. Let's discuss a little bit the different types of bullying that are existing in society today. Some are new. Some have always existed. So you have the mean girl bullying among girls, and again, people can switch roles, and even the sweetest little girls can sometimes be, cruel to classmates or friends, and it's usually around, clothes, fashion, things like that. And then, but then you also have physical bullying, which more often occurs among boys, but can occur among girls too, and sometimes that can result in really, harming somebody to the point of like physical disability, where people don't stop the person who's doing the bullying and the bystanders don't do anything, or the kid is so afraid to go to school. And then now we have this whole new thing of cyberbullying, where you can stalk somebody or write mean things about them on your Facebook page, or, you can text them and negative messages. and they get something really bad, like as they're running about their day, without even interacting with that person. So, you know, it's like a whole new vista for new kinds of bullying, where people can hide behind anonymity on the internet, so to speak, or on electronic media. So, Dr. German, what are your thoughts about all these different kinds of bullying? Let's start with cyberbullying, for instance.
Right. So when we're speaking of cyberbullying, one of the key aspects of it that makes it much more potent at times even than regular traditional face-to-face bullying is this whole idea of it being intrusive in the sense that it doesn't turn off because it's the means of it being perpetrated is constant. So that at least to some degree, when we were speaking more about traditional bullying, at least a child or adolescent would feel he had some reprieve once he was home, if that's a safe environment. But now with the advent of technology, if that child or adolescent is constantly tuned in or plugged in, as they say, then the opportunity for this to continue to happen is now 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I think that that's one of the main reasons why it may feel like we're seeing a higher number of kids either A, get to a point where they try to hurt themselves, or B, retaliate because of them feeling this constant barrage of being teased, bullied, and made fun of. Then the other key aspect of when we're speaking about cyberbullying that's different is in an article that I recently read, it identified how, you know, we are generally social beings, and in interacting face-to-face, that at times allows you to gauge what you're saying, how that is impacting someone else. But once we turn now to technology, that gets removed. And basically now there's this disinhibition that now comes to the forefront, and all of a sudden a person may say certain things and without even thinking or without taking into consideration the impact, because there isn't that visual of the nonverbal behavior. And that oftentimes is what causes the person who's the bullier who's doing the bullying to not have a sense of, have I gone too far? Because there's no interaction there to gauge what they're doing.
Right, exactly. And I think that's in the workplace, you know, at least in our department here, we're actually having to talk to some of our younger employees about this to say, you know, if you have to discuss something that is going to be a tough topic or you're angry, do not hit the send button. Do not type anything. Mm-hmm. If, you know, ask for a face-to-face meeting so that people can read your body language and just don't use certain words, you know? So, and it's amazing. It's sort of like, because they've used electronics their whole life, they don't really understand that when you text or email something, it remains in cyberspace forever. And in a workplace situation, it can be used as a clear evidence that you've done something.
Correct. Exactly.
Yes. Correct. So I think that it's all really difficult, and you know, and then we have all these rules in schools today, which are good rules, you know, no fighting, no bringing any weapons, you know, of any kind. And but sometimes that gets kind of gray over the last few years. I've actually heard from just people I know, acquaintances, once from just a stranger that I was chatting with who told me the story about his son, and another from a mom that I sort of just know as an acquaintance who the kids go to school in the same school system as my son, and where there's like no real bullying that we've ever heard of, but you know, where this other kid attacked the kid in the schoolyard, and he didn't fight back because he told his mother the rule is no fighting. I would get detention. And she's like, but sweetie, if this was like, this was a dangerous situation, you should have done something because there was no one else around. So what do we teach our – and then I ran into somebody I ran into a person that I was just chatting with, and this was like 6 months ago, and he was saying how he had taught his son that, you know, even if you get into trouble later on, you've got to stand up for yourself. And his kid did that one day in the school bus, and the driver felt the kid was at fault, but his dad's like, you know, it's okay because I don't want you to be, you know, a victim. So what do you think about all this?
Well, exactly. And I think that's where, in that sense, traditional bullying, which can, as you mentioned, be that physical aspect where kids being taught, whether it's self-defense or whether it's martial arts and things like that, that's where I feel like those are good opportunities because, number one, it gives the child or the adolescent self-esteem, but it also provides them with the discipline of understanding that that is the last resort you turn to if you feel something, if your life, like you're mentioning, is in danger. So it's an understanding that it's, you turn to that as the last resort, and also you're also taught you use what force you need to be able to get away from the situation. So it, you know, it comes with that aspect of responsibility.
Right. No, I totally agree with you. And actually, it's interesting you say that because my son and I used to take martial arts in the past. And what I heard this story was actually from the mom was in the martial arts studio, and she had said to her son, but you are learning, you know, martial arts, and these were not like meek kids, and but they were just like rule following kids, you know. They're like, yeah, but in school you're not supposed to do this. So I think that's, these are all like complicated life lessons, because we want to teach our children to follow the rules, and we want to follow the rules ourselves. But as we grow out of childhood into adolescence, we start realizing that while we need to follow the rules, sometimes in life, following the rules gets you into far more trouble than breaking the rules, you know?
Right.
And but I think it's easier for people who have a certain degree of assertiveness in their personality, or who have a strong-willed personality where, you know, they just hate being pushed around. So at some point, they're going to stand up for themselves, even if that's uncomfortable, you know, even if they don't like confrontation, if they have assertiveness in their personality, they're going to stand up, and then people pick it up and they sort of don't push them around. But, or they do sometimes, but not on a regular basis. But what do you say to people, whether it's children and then they grow up into adulthood, they're people pleasing, they want to always keep the peace, they're just not very good at like standing up for themselves, not because there's something wrong with them, but it's just a natural variation of human personality. Everybody can't be assertive and, you know, strong-willed. Then we'd be, you know, it's just not, that's not the way of things. What do you say to those people or those kids who have trouble with that?
Well, hopefully, if they're connected with their parents or someone who's an adult figure, you know, usually I'll try to interact in the family dynamic to first try to understand how, you know, how relationships are in the household. because oftentimes not tuned in, that right there could be the underlying problem. So in seeing to what degree the parent is tuned in, and then if they are, you know, in trying to help facilitate it, by role modeling for the parent, some of the behavior so that that parent can then do that for the child. So yes, it's okay to be easygoing, laid back and everything, but then at the same point in time, hopefully that parent would be able to convey to that child that there are certain times where that it's okay to be more assertive, and to for that parent, hopefully maybe to model again some of those situations, or to speak about examples where they've had to take on that aspect in order to, let's say, get a promotion, or in order to get someone to stop doing something, you know, so that again, when the children are watching their parents, they're learning, and hopefully they can see how that behavior is done, so that they can kind of incorporate it into their own development of their personality, so that they can feel okay to do it at times if the situation calls for it.
Exactly. And then you also don't want to turn them into these aggressive people that are, like, always arguing about something because if they feel they weren't treated fairly or got the short end of the stick, because life is not always fair, and sometimes you fight it, and sometimes you just let it go. You have to pick your battles in life, so to speak.
Right. And another key thing that I would add would be that sometimes if parents are in a position where they feel disconnected or intimidated by either, you know, what they hear is happening to their child, or by their lack of knowledge when it comes to technology, you know, in community programs or even maybe through the school, if, you know, it's going to be real important for schools or communities to reach out to parents to let them realize that there are parenting classes, perhaps, that they can take advantage of. Because just because their child is now a teenager, it doesn't mean that they know everything that they need to do now because the child is older. That might be the time they really may need some support, and in maybe going to a parenting class that can educate them on some of the things that kids do or kids have access to through electronic media, that empowers the parent so that they can be more vigilant and involved. And then again, model for the child what's acceptable and what's not acceptable, whether it's making these silly comments that the child may think is a prank that, like you mentioned before, may be hurtful to someone else, or when it's not acceptable to be receiving certain advances just because it's, oh, well, this is what kids do. No, that may not be acceptable. So again, it allows them to be a little bit more involved in what's happening with social media and feel more empowered if they feel, let's say, they're disconnected. So it's important for them to have those resources available to them.
I totally agree. And I think some of it is also, like, if kids have friends in school, that they have a, you know, nice friend circle, then if somebody picks on them, they feel like they can stand up to that person, and their friends will also stand up to them, and then the person moves on. But I think the kid who is more at risk for ongoing, you know, to be a victim of ongoing bullying are sometimes those kids who are very socially awkward, and they don't really have, like, they're not able to make any real close connections with friends and classmates, and they don't have friends in school. They're kind of a loner kid, and they get picked on, and there's no buffer. There's no one to, you know, they're more like vulnerable, so to speak. And what do you think, as a psychiatrist, and specifically as a child psychiatrist, what do you feel about all of our recent, you know, we've had these, we've had some terrible instances of, you know, gun violence, and, you know, our latest one in our own state of Connecticut, which was so tragic. But, you know, before that, we had some other instances in other parts of the country where it turned out in retrospect that the person who then went on to do these, you know, heinous, violent acts, college shootings, things like that, that they had felt like they were socially ostracized, or they weren't able to break into any social groups, and then they were sort of like this, you know, awkward, you know, loner who had been picked on. Do you think that being bullied throughout school can actually turn someone who's not inherently violent into doing some extremely violent thing, like later on in life?
Well, yes. I mean, what I think can happen is oftentimes a person, if that behavior is being done towards them, oftentimes they may go down either one or two paths, which is either they may internalize it and then it may lead to them taking their own life, or they may decide that they're going to get even and then they retaliate. So in exactly describing what you was just speaking about with, I can't remember which particular situation, but I remember there was one of these school type shootings where the person actually told someone he liked not to come to school that day, and then, you know, proceeded to then carry out, you know, his assault on specifically the peers he felt wronged him. So, you know, so there is sometimes that sense of them reaching, I guess, their breaking point, and then unfortunately taking that path that is, as we all have seen and dealt with, is very destructive to everyone.
That sounds really like something we should think about. So now we're coming up to another break, so we should talk more about all of these topics when we return. They're such good things to discuss. And family bullying, we haven't done that one. So we definitely should discuss that when we return. So callers, if you would like to call in, we would love to hear from you. 866-472-5792 is the number to call in. The topic is bullying. Our guest today is Dr. Ernest German, who is a child psychiatrist. You're listening to Mental Health with Dr. Sarita Rao. You could find my show's Facebook page, Dr. Sarita Rao Radio Show, and find out more about upcoming guests and topics. I also am writing a blog every week on Press Pass in Voice America, so you could certainly find that. Please join us again on the other side of this short break. Our topic is bullying, and our guest is Dr. Ernest German.
Stay connected. Sign up for our newsletter. Go beyond your favorite Voice America shows. Visit iradioblog.com.
Tune in to Your Health Workshop weekly for the most up-to-date information and support on a variety of health issues. Host Mary Shulman, a best-selling author and patient advocate, will speak with guests and answer your questions on items like thyroid issues, hair loss, hormone balance, diet, and more. We'll bring you the support and tools so that you can be educated on what to do next when visiting your doctor and other medical professionals. Your Health Workshop airs live every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Health and Wellness.
If you have a loved one that is undergoing treatment for substance abuse or mental illness, you owe it to them and yourself to tune in to One Hour at a Time with host Mary Woods. This compassionate and educational talk show will help you help those that you love by better understanding their condition and their personal recovery process. Tune in every Monday at 12 noon Pacific Time to One Hour at a Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Recovery begins this hour.
If you think you've seen online TV before, let us surprise you.
VoiceAmerica.tv is online now.
The leader in live internet talk radio has done it again. Multiple channels, a state-of-the-art viewing experience, live and on-demand programs streaming 24 hours a day. It's exactly what you want, when you want it.
VoiceAmerica.tv.
From health and wellness to business, sports, and everything in between, discover our new world. Visit VoiceAmerica.tv now and experience the future of online television.
VoiceAmerica.tv.
Your life, your health, your network. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to Mental Health with Dr. Sarita Rao. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Now, back to today's program.
Hi, everyone. You're listening to Mental Health with Dr. Sarita Rao. So we're here today talking about bullying, and our guest today is Dr. Ernest German. So if you would like to call in, the number is 866-472-5792. So, Dr. German, I wanted to ask a question about the more violent forms of bullying that often occurs among boys or our young men, where, we've all heard these stories, like from either, people that we know or people in the family, where sometimes, intervening by the bystander doesn't always produce good results, because it's like very, people have jumped in because otherwise the other person will get really badly physically assaulted. But then later in the heat of the moment, it's sort of a he said, she said thing, and sometimes people get punished for it, or they're sent the message that, they just got to engage in physical violence. So what do you think about that? I mean, I know you may not have any solution to it. I don't think there is any clear-cut solution. It's a situation by situation, because the person who doesn't intervene and has the physical strength to do something, if they don't intervene, then they have to live with themselves the rest of their life saying, oh, my God, this person got, beaten and I didn't do anything. So, what are your thoughts about that? Do you think as a society we've set up too many rigid rules around this?
Right. So, yes, I mean, with that caveat and understanding that, for one, a person may be hesitant because of what may in turn come back to them if something does occur and they do become physically involved, so whether they end up being accused of anything or whether they in the process get themselves injured. So oftentimes what would be recommended is actually just at times by a matter of presence, oftentimes that is enough at times to cause the behavior to stop. So if someone is doing something inappropriate, and just by the other person being there and making their presence felt, often that may get the person to stop the behavior. And then the other key thing is like they say, technology can either be good or bad. So this would be possibly a situation where technology can be good, because at that point in time, either it can be videotaped, or, if you don't feel comfortable videotaping the situation, because then you feel they may immediately turn towards you, while you're walking away, you can immediately call 911, if something is happening. If you're, in a public domain, for example, but obviously if you're in school, then depending on how comfortable you are because some schools will have anonymous reporting, so you can convey your concern by that means if you're in a school setting and you still, you know, don't want to get involved in the situation. So there are different ways of still doing something without necessarily physically doing something as well.
Well, that's a good point. You know, and then at other times, you know, if you might have to physically do something, in which case it's just a matter of, like, ethics and conscience, I guess, because then it's like one of those really difficult situations in life where, you know, you just have to decide in a split second, you know, if the people aren't stopping or you feel that person's life is in danger, you know. What about family bullying? Like, we hear from people, particularly as psychiatrists, we hear this all the time, where one member of a family just gets treated very badly all the time, and it's just become so entrenched that nobody does anything about it, and they dread going to family get-togethers. They really don't want to deal with their family at all, but they just go to keep the peace, or, you know, they don't want to, you know, they just don't want to, like, cut off the family relationship. So there are all these situations where, you know, a family member, sometimes a sibling, is bullied by other siblings, usually not physically, you know, verbal criticism, that sort of thing. And then it persists throughout life. So do you have any advice for people like that who are in that situation, either perpetrators or victims?
Right. Well, in first, I guess, tying it to the child and adolescent piece, that is why it's so important where, you know, we often immediately come to the aid of the person being bullied and more so are pejorative to the person doing the bullying. But it is so important to work with that person who has started engaging in that behavior because of exactly what you've just pointed out, that, you know, there are statistics that are showing that the person who engages in bullying behavior in the middle school years are very likely to therefore continue developing antisocial behaviors and carry those behaviors into adulthood and then continue to perpetrate that towards those behavior towards, you know, whether it's other family members or other individuals, period. So that's why it's so important to try to interrupt that cycle early, because it's easier, hopefully, to do it then. But then, like you're saying, with regards to the behavior, once it does happen and it is happening between adults, those are then the sometimes the people we see as adults coming into us for anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, and in interacting with them, hopefully being at a point where we are able to advocate for them, especially, you know, sometimes, like you mentioned, it might be even something like elder abuse. I mean, these individuals then perpetrate not just downwards, but then they can start perpetrating even upwards, you know, to some of their parents, because that's just the way they've navigated their lives. So when we come into contact with them, it is, you know, then it's so important for us to be able to advocate for them to try to see if we can help remove them from or give them further support in being able to do something about their immediate situation. And it's going to be very important also for the primary care providers to be mindful of asking those kinds of questions when they come in for a checkup. And, you know, because we can so quickly just be focused on their medical health and not really screen for their mental health. So the primary care providers have a major role in this as well, in being able to help, you know, their patients in a full, comprehensive way as well.
I so agree. And actually, that's a whole another topic for a different show, which, you know, I'm thinking today we must do this, which is domestic violence, you know.
Yep.
So
yeah.
In mental health, we see so many women who are really badly physically abused in romantic relationships by their husbands, and they just never leave, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're afraid. They don't feel like they can stand on their own feet, or somehow they just, you know, when the person begs them to come back, they return. And then they're like, you know, so, you know, affected by this. I mean, it's impossible for them to go forward and carry out any kind of, like, normal emotional life. They turn to drugs sometimes. So that's a whole another topic is the domestic violence piece.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you know, through my years as a psychiatrist, I have met, like, few, but a very small group, but because I don't think they come out that easily. But there's also these men who are abused by their wives, even if the wives are much smaller. And that's rare, but, you know, maybe it's less rare than we think, because the few men that I've met, they tell me they can never tell anyone, you know?
Right.
Because it's so,
yeah.
It's considered like,
shame.
Yeah, it's so much shame, and why can't you do something about it? But they've all said to me, I can't do anything about it, because if I do anything, even hold off my wife, then, you know, I'll be arrested if she calls the police, because they'll never believe me. So, but that's a whole another topic. But that's sort of like an extreme form, which can start out with bullying, where, like you're saying, a middle schooler who starts bullying kids at school, then grows up and becomes this, you know, young man who then, you know, physically abuses the women in his life, you know, and then there are women who are afraid to leave, or they feel trapped, or economic, so on and so forth. So I think in general, we have to just try to practice some degree of, like, kindness in our lives. And we have to practice some polish and some civility. But I don't necessarily think that polish and civility, which are very important, you know, that polish, civility, sophistication, or elegance, they don't necessarily translate into kindness. I mean, there are a lot of societies, you know, around the world where people are inherently raised to be very polished, you know, always very polite, you know, following social rules, you know, the whole of Asia, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I saw this when I lived in the South. You know, it's very nice that the people are so polite, and they're not just pretending, they're inherently polite. But it's not like in all these places people don't do bad things to each other, they just do it nicely, you know?
Right.
And you could
right.
insult somebody without using a single four-letter word. You could tear their self-esteem into shreds without, you know, while being very polished and elegant about it. So I think it's important to be polite, and it's important to have to teach our kids to have some degree of polish and elegance. That definitely is important. I think it makes social interactions easier. It seeps into our process. But I think that doesn't necessarily preclude – bullying can happen even in that situation.
Right, right. And that's why I think this is exactly the key aspect of this is that it's a culture at times, and it can be subtle. And when it is observed, it needs to be identified and admonished so that it is not perpetrated any further.
I so agree. You've been a fabulous guest, so we've been so happy to have you. We learned a lot today, and definitely we should do a show on domestic violence as a follow-up. So thank you so much for coming on the show today.
No problem. Thank you. I enjoyed my time.
So next week, please join us again. And today you heard Mental Health with Dr. Sarita Rao, and you can find my show's Facebook page, Dr. Sarita Rao Radio Show, and find out about upcoming guests and topics, and also read the blogs on Press Pass through Voice America. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and talk to you next week.
Thank you again for tuning in to Mental Health with Dr. Sarita Rao. Please join us again next Thursday morning at 6 a.m. Pacific Time and 9 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Have a great week.